This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. My co-host, Craig Blumenschein, is on vacation. Coming up in the second half of today's show, it's going to be a gorgeous weekend across much of the state. Maybe time for some barbecue. Mushrooms, asparagus, of course, meat options heavily favored in the world of barbecue. We talk with Rick Guillon for Prairie Plates. But we are going to start today with a political cartoon that I saw once, and it was of a bunch of cats sitting at a table, and they were deciding the rights of mice. They're predators. They're going to prey on the mice. The cats in this situation hold all of the power, and they are making all of the decisions. There is a new effort underway to get more people, quote, in the room, unquote, when decisions are being made, and specifically Indigenous people, though the effort is open to everyone. It's called the Documenters Project, and people can get paid to do things like attend city meetings and take notes and allow journalists to cover these stories more accurately. There is a meeting coming up on May 15th in Bismarck for people who are interested in joining the Documenters program. This specific Documenters Project is the 19th overall in the country, but the first in two ways, one in a rural area and two by an Indigenous-led newsroom. We have two guests today to talk about representation in the media. We have Jody Rave Spotted Bear, the founder of the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance, and a name that will be familiar to listeners of Main Street, a former host of Main Street, Alicia Haglund-Thorpe. She is the program manager for the Bismarck Documenters Program. Jody Mazagiriads, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Alicia Pidamiyaye, thank you for joining us today.
Pidamiyaye, it's so much fun to be back. Thank you for having us.
Yes, and welcome back to the air. Fun to have you on this side of the microphone.
Yes, it is.
I want to start asking a question to each of you, and that is that I like to follow the advice of Dr. David Troyer, an Ojibwe scholar, who says, if you don't know to say Indian, Native, Indigenous, just ask. Jody, we'll start with you. Do you have a preferred term and why?
That's a fair question, and one we talk about in Indian country many times. And the name of our organization is the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance. But I just wrote a headline in our newsletter today where I used the word Indian. But when I identify myself to people, I'm Mandan and Hidatsa and Lakota. So that's a subject and terminology that is pretty fluid, I would say. But yeah, it always helps to ask, but I'm comfortable with all three terms.
Alicia, the same to you?
Well, in a broad text, when we're talking outside of Indigenous areas, I prefer to be called Indigenous outside of that. But if I'm talking to another friend, you know, we say Indian. Mm. More than likely, I'm going to introduce myself as Dakota.
Thank you for that. Jody, let's start with your organization. What is the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance?
Well, the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance is a 501c3 nonprofit media organization, which was founded largely to promote freedom of information and independent media within Indian country.
And it led to a really wonderful project called Buffalo's Fire, which has just a kind of an amazing origin story. Let's wrap that in and then go a little bit more into detail on the work of both parts of this year.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because Buffalo's Fire actually came before the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance.
Thank you.
So it started as a for-profit when I lived right after I left Lee Newspapers and started a website called Buffalo's Fire. And it did really, really well because I had a lot of the readers that were with me during Lee Enterprises follow onto that particular website. But then I moved back to North Dakota and the website went dark for a while, so I had to rebuild it. But that was only after I founded the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance to do our advocacy work for press freedom. And then with that was the revival of Buffalo's Fire. So I'm from the Fort Berthold Reservation. I live in a community of Twin Buttes, which is largely the Nuera or the Mandan community. But the website's really named in memory of my mother, the late G. Janet Gunderson Spotted Bear, who was a counselor at one time at United Tribes here in Bismarck. But we live right where the prairie meets the badlands, and so this is a place where the tiger lilies grow on, like, mostly on the northern side of hills. And so after my mother passed away, I just wanted to do something in her memory. So in memory of those flowers, the tiger lilies, in the Nueta language, it is called the Buffalo's Fire. And so that's where the name comes from.
It's a really wonderful way to honor a cultural background that, across the board, is vastly underrepresented. So let's talk about how that manifests in journalism, something that a lot of the rest of us take for granted, that I can turn on the TV and I'm pretty much guaranteed to see someone who looks like me, or I can open a newspaper and there'll be a story like that. How do you, we talked kind of mission statement, Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance here, but let's talk about the goals of what you do.
Right. Well, really, the premise of our work is to be a model of what an Indigenous-led independent newsroom looks like. And you're right, we are not really visible. So good example of that. I went to the Indigenous Journalist Association conference, which was in Winnipeg this year, and so there was about 500 Native journalists from Canada and the U.S. in attendance. But one of the speakers was from one of the First Nations leaders addressed our audience. And one thing he said that was really poignant was, when he crosses the border into the U.S., you don't really hear or see Native people in broadcast or on TV or in advertisements. But that presence is pretty well felt when you're in Canada. So I think that's really an issue that we have in this country, is a lack of media attention to the mainstream, which is one reason I went into the mainstream press and reported there for 15 years. But upon returning to North Dakota, which is where I'm from, I thought, okay, I've got to bite the bullet and try to start our own news organization here, because we don't have a lot of that news, where we're visible on a daily basis.
Part of that includes something called the Documenters Project. And this is something, we loved having Alicia on the air. We were sad that she left us, but absolutely understand the drive, Alicia, that you have to be working in an Indigenous-led newsroom. So tell us about what this Documenters Project is and what you're doing with it.
When I learned of the program, I was chomping at the bit to be a part of it, and I wasn't quite sure how it was going to work out. I was kind of freelancing at the time, and then when I saw the ad come around for the Documenters, it really intrigued me. I knew more that I wanted to do more writing, but I also know how important this program is, and so I'm getting to do all of that. So I'm super, super thrilled to be able to utilize all the skills that I have built up over the years. So coming back back to the question on what the Bismarck Documenters program is, the goal of it is really simple. We want to put people in the rooms where decisions are made that impact us all. And so attending public meetings, we know how important they are for democracy. So these meetings will help our citizens learn more about and take actions on the systems that are going to impact their lives. And we know that public meetings are sometimes inaccessible, or even learning about the agenda ahead of time or when they're meeting, that can be hard to find, but just attending the meetings can be intimidating as well. And so to address this problem, Bismarck Documenters is putting the public back into public meetings. We'll train, we incentivize, and we'll pay local citizens to document community meetings and local government.
So what do you mean by document those meetings? Are you saying taking notes on Facebook Live? What do you mean?
There's a number of ways that can be done, yes. For the most part, the simplest is note-taking. If there are people who want to use recording devices, eventually we would be able to edit that, and they could have, you know, the whole meeting on an audio piece, for example. But we're not quite at the moment where we're going to have, you know, broadcast television. But how we're starting is how a lot of the other documenter cities started. In fact, we're the 19th city, the first rural cohort a part of this, and the first indigenous-led cohort to do this. And so,
no pressure.
Right, no pressure at all. But we also found out that every community is different. So you need to find what's good for your community to make things work. And in this situation, we're going to start with note takers, pen and paper, or if they want to use their laptop, however that works. We give them kind of a template to follow on how to take the notes. And then our editors go in and kind of clean up the notes a little bit. We show them, you know, exactly kind of what it is that we're looking for. Nobody's perfect. Everybody's going to have their own style. But more or less, we publish the notes on our documenters website for everybody to see. We know that there's a shortage in newsrooms, and we can help fill that gap with, you know, if there's not enough reporters to get out to these public meetings, we'll be reporting on those meetings, and they'll have access to those notes, and they can also find leads to follow up on. So that's another great part of this program. And we also feel that partnering with other newsrooms can also be an excellent benefit for both them and us. We train them, give them incentives, and what our partners can do can also offer free trainings as well to get people more well-rounded into what they're doing as a documenter.
We're visiting today with Alicia Hegland-Thorpe. She is the site manager for the Bismarck Documenters Program. We also have as a guest today Jody Rave Spotted Bear. She is the founder and director of the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance, and we are visiting today about representation. Alicia, let's stay on you a little longer here, although both of you can certainly answer, because there is a big public meeting coming up here on May 15th. It's happening at 5:30 p.m. at the Buffalo's Fire Workspace at the Juniper Workantile in downtown Bismarck. How will this work? Who do you want to show up?
Really, anybody who is interested in civic government. Anybody who wants to learn how to be in these spaces, be more comfortable in these spaces, and how to people who are interested in holding their elected officials accountable. How the orientation would work, more or less, is anybody who is interested would get it's a small workshop. We're going to teach them, you know, facts versus opinions, the sunshine laws, and a couple of other things just to kind of get the base down. And then we show them kind of what we're looking for and how we pay you. And we're going to eat while we're doing it.
I love that. Jody, anything to add there?
Yeah, you know, you asked who do we want to attend. So Alicia had mentioned everybody is invited to participate because this is civic engagement, and so we're being inclusive. But, you know, we're also making the effort to reach out to our Indigenous community folks that, for the most part, have been not felt welcome in these spaces. Yeah. And so we really want to show them that, you know, city council, county commission, tribal council meetings are a place where it's a chance. This is what we would call participatory journalism, where we're inviting the public to help tell stories. So we're not calling them journalists. They're just simply documenters. They're note takers, and we'll train them on how to take these notes. We'll bring them back. We'll edit them. We'll fact check them. And then we'll produce all of this information on the buffaloesfire.com website.
Documenters are leaders. They're people who can be relied on for information and knowledge. And so through community, we know anything is possible as long as you have a community behind you. So we're going to need the help of documenters to be leaders, to help motivate, educate, and activate their friends and family and neighbors to be a part of this. This is a growing movement across the nation.
And, you know, you both mentioned that this is open to anybody, but yes, that special focus on bringing Indigenous people into the room. If I may, I'd like to ask, how often have you ladies been the only Indigenous person in the room in a meeting like this where big decisions are being made?
Yeah, more times than I would like to remember. happens a lot, and this is just a way to bring in the community to be a part of the to be witness and to report and document these big decisions that are happening. Alicia had mentioned that the documenters are in there's 19 news organizations in 15 states that are doing this work, and we really are helping the documenters network set a new course by going into Indigenous communities also. So not only are we covering local meetings here in the Bismarck, Mandan, Lincoln area, but we've also been in conversation with the publisher of the Teton Times on the Standing Rock Reservation, and she's up for this idea of helping us help them report on tribal council meetings. So that's a work in progress, but that is something that we're also going into our own communities and reporting on meetings to help get this information out to our communities.
What would you say? I'm not even sure how to formulate this question. You know, as you mentioned, Jody, the media representation here, vastly non-Indigenous backgrounds here for the people gathering and presenting the news. What are we most getting wrong?
Well, just by not being there most of the time. Because, you know, there are good journalists out there that know how to interact with Native communities. They're just so few and far between. So, you know, I do give credit for the non-Indigenous journalists that take the time to know our communities. We just don't see that big of an investment in mainstream news operations. What I can say, though, is there is definitely a rise of Indigenous news desks within these mainstream publications around the country. So one of our board members just sent us a press release about KOSU in Oklahoma, who just hired an Indigenous Affairs reporter, and they have an Indigenous Affairs desk. So there's some good things happening, and I'd like to focus and encourage more mainstream outlets to create a greater presence and bring in more Native people into their programming and into their newsrooms as staff members and editors and managers and decision makers.
Yeah, and I think one of the most sort of racist thoughts that I ever had was in reading a book by a woman who is a now former professor of Native American Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth, Linda Lagarde Grover. And she wrote this beautiful book, Onigamacing Seasons of an Ojibwe Year. And she wrote about Thanksgiving. And I remember sort of thinking, oh, aren't they supposed to not like Thanksgiving? And aren't I, as this nice, well-meaning white person, supposed to just feel bad about the past instead of at all allowing for, one, the obvious that these celebrations of Thanksgiving, of giving thanks, were not at all invented by colonists, and two, just well-rounded, allowing Indigenous people to be in the present, you know, only thinking of them as in the past here.
You know, you talk about being in the past and being in the present. That is our biggest problem that we have in our education system, is that the majority of information that's taught about us is like pre-1900. And that just does a huge disservice. Yeah, like 80% of what's taught to students is all of this historical information. But, you know, they're missing the larger story that we still exist. You know, I'm part of the three affiliated tribes. And, you know, my grandparents were Mandan and Hidatsa. And the Mandan came close to the brink of totally disappearing, with our numbers going down to about 150, depending on, you know, who your source is. But we're still here, and our Mandan culture, our Nueta culture is very much alive, and those are the stories that actually need to be focused on, is who we are as contemporary people, and bringing that into our education system.
You know, I wanted to add, too, just going back on your question, what is the media doing wrong? Like, how can mainstream media be better?
Yeah.
I think, you know, with my experience when I was in broadcasting, 20 years ago, this is a starter market. North Dakota is. So people come here for 3-4 months and then they move on. So when you have reporters here that don't plan on making North Dakota home, they just learn, you know, kind of the surface of things and they move on. So again, this is my opinion, but this is also what I experience. So when it comes to building relationships with Indigenous communities, it's going to be difficult if your goal is to be somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We're running short on time here, but Jody, you know, you said contemporary, and you talked about telling the stories. What are the biggest areas of focus for you, specifically, you know, on Buffalo's Fire and on the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance here? What are the stories that you are most focusing on telling?
Well, that really lies within who we're hiring to be reporters. So we have Adriana Adame, who is coming to us through Report for America Awesome Program, and we hired her. Her beat is called Indigenous Democracy. So we really have her focusing on Indian education, which, as I mentioned, is a real problem area that needs a lot of attention. We already offered a second job to another Report for America reporter, and that's Grace Fiore, who is coming to us from the UMass Amherst out in Massachusetts. And we hired her as an environmental reporter. So we're really having her focus on the Missouri River and also going upstream and looking at the oil development and how that's affecting the environment and the river. So those are really important areas. Another key area is missing and murdered Indigenous persons. I had just been on a panel at the Native Americans and Philanthropy Conference when that question came up. What is really important here? And I had to refer to the First Nations Development Institute, which recently released a survey about what is at the top of voters' minds right now. And the number one issue for Native voters is missing and murdered Indigenous peoples. So we just sent Alicia up to the Spirit Lake Reservation. She could probably talk about that. I don't know what our time is, but those are some key areas for us.
Jody, mazigidads for your time today.
Mazigidads, washerehere. Ashley, thank you for inviting us into your space and giving us an opportunity to talk about Native news that's happening within our community.
Alicia Padamiaye, for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jody Rave Spotted Bear, the founder of the Indigenous Media Freedom Alliance, and Alicia Heglin Thorpe, who is the program manager for the Bismarck Documenters Program. The upcoming meeting is at 5:30 p.m. May 15th at the Juniper Workentile in Bismarck. Still to come on Main Street, barbecue season.
Politicians and the media make crime among migrants a talking point.
There was another brutal migrant attack on New York
City. Should have been jail time for the migrants caught on camera.
Does immigration actually affect the crime rate? Voices from New York City address the complexity for NPR's election series, We the Voters. On the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
4 a.m. to 9 central here on Prairie Public.
I like bagels.
Eat some barbecue.
Applesauce and some nice red beets.
All right, who's hungry? It's time for Prairie Plates with Rick Guillen. Rick, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Good to be back with you.
All right, we're going to talk barbecue today. Is this a noun or a verb? Or is it both?
I think you can use it as both. Absolutely.
Okay, so what is barbecue?
Well, in that Robert Earl Keen song, he used it as a noun. So, barbecue would be kind of a low and slow process, at least with meat. With vegetables, you can smoke them a little bit. It doesn't take quite as long. But yes, barbecue is kind of that low and slow technique, using some wood smoke, using some charcoal. It's different than grilling, which is really a hot and fast technique. And you can kind of switch up the charcoals there a little bit more. There are a lot of meats you can barbecue. So, yeah, a lot to talk about
today.
Are
there ones you can't? I mean, that's a real question.
it is a real question, and that's a very good question, because meat cuts with, like, lower connective tissues or lower fat content, I really wouldn't barbecue, like, a New York strip steak, a loin steak, that sort of thing. You can smoke a strip steak. I just like those things hot and fast. Pork chops. I mean, I do see some smoked pork chops, but I'd rather have a juicy pork chop that's grilled on high heat charcoal, that sort of thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's some fish, is like a tuna steak. You can smoke salmon. That's quite good, obviously. but tuna steak, swordfish steak, those sorts of things, I'd stick to just the regular grilling. A low and slow process with those sorts of things, I just don't think really works out that well. But on the other hand, there are a lot of meats that you can barbecue, like pork ribs, pork shoulder, pork belly. If you got a lot of room, a whole hog.
Pork is very represented in the barbecue community here.
It definitely is. And then on the back, a ham also, if you want to smoke the ham and not just have a cured ham. But beef is also represented well with brisket. Beef ribs, like those dinosaur ribs people are into these days. Cabrito.
I'm sorry, did you just say dinosaur ribs?
They're like huge.
What is Listen, Jurassic Park wasn't real.
We're not eating like brontosaurus ribs like in the Flintstones where it tips the car over.
Okay. These are just huge? Like, is this because certain breeds are getting bigger, or is it a part we didn't used to access? Are they being bred with bison? What is happening? What's a buffalo rib?
Well, they're larger ribs kind of down in the plate section. Some are kind of in the chuck section, but these beef ribs have a lot of meat on them, and they're very juicy, and you have to basically use a technique like smoking a brisket, because they do take a while. They like to wrap them. The pros like to wrap them in butcher paper. I'm no expert when it comes to beef ribs or brisket. I've done them a few times, and you really need to dial it in and do it a lot. Ribs, pulled pork, that sort of thing, that's kind of a breeze for me. But yeah, I mean, it does take a lot to make beef barbecue very good. And so it takes a lot of patience as well. But there are different methods you can use. Smoke them for a while, wrap it in butcher paper, put it back in the smoker. A lot of people just put it in the oven because it's kind of the same thing. But yeah, there's a lot of technique in it. And then inside the butcher paper, people will put like beef tallow or beef broth, that sort of thing. It gets very complicated, brisket and and beef ribs, but they're delicious. It's worth the wait. It's worth the techniques.
You know, I was traveling in Iceland once, and their donuts are fried in sheep tallow. And I just
wanted to insert that. it makes them extra delicious. I'm assuming a person could barbecue something in the ovine family here, the sheep family.
Yes, I've had whole lamb rotisserie barbecued when I worked for refugee resettlement in the late 90s. The Bosnian, former Yugoslavian population, those folks that settled here in Fargo would invite me over because I helped them with furniture and stuff like that. And we'd have a big old party, and they'd make these pits that were like these big rotisserie pits, and they would get a whole lamb rotisserie that thing all day, baste it in olive oil, garlic, lemon juice. I mean, this was delicious.
Oh, that does sound delicious. And I also want to do that with sweet potatoes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Vegetables are great. Barbecued vegetables are great. You can smoke vegetables. Mushrooms, I see that quite often. Ooh, they're not really a vegetable, but there's a smoked carrot sandwich.
Tell me everything.
Over at Burn Bombs, and it's quite good. It's a smoked.
Oh, is that their vegan lox?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And they do a sandwich version of that, and it's like a vegan Reuben, I think it's called, and they use smoked carrots in that. And so you can smoke a lot of different things. You don't have to just stick to meat, but there are also things like chicken and turkey, fish, obviously, salmon, trout, whitefish. Some people like carp suckers, and then Japanese unagi with eels. And then you can smoke cheese. And this isn't really barbecue, but I do like a smoked whiskey drink here.
You and my husband really, really need to meet. He is honestly smoking brisket and drinking smoked whiskey today.
Sounds like we could be good friends, yeah.
When you said fish, I'm known for being quite literal. And I often think barbecue and equate it with a barbecue sauce. And there just to me is nothing that sounds good about whitefish and barbecue sauce as a combination. Do you have to have a sauce?
No. A lot of times people will, like with wings, they'll do a dry rub, just a dry spice blend. Ribs, same thing. You can sprinkle a dry rub on some brisket or pulled pork too. But mostly you see it with like chicken wings or ribs, and there is no sauce, although I like to baste ribs about every half an hour or so in like apple cider vinegar, a little brown sugar, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there is kind of a glaze sauce in that sense, but sometimes that dry rub or just it's a spice blend, paprika, garlic powder, onion powder, or some brown sugar, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And could that kind of be generally applied to, you said cheese?
Well, you know, there are some cheeses I've had that have a coating, like an herb coating. There's one at Luna that has a lavender coating that's really kind of, and then one that has a coffee coating.
And what?
I know. But that is a really good idea, a dry rub smoked cheese.
Did we just invent this?
I think we did.
Okay, perfect. Let's buy that website right now.
I like this. And if somebody does this out there, email us a photo at plates at...
No, email us an invitation,
yes.
Rick. Email us an invitation.
Even better.
plates@prairiepublic.org.
Excellent.
Okay, but really, go back to some of the vegetables and cheeses and the non-meat options here. Let's make this a more inclusive barbecue. Set us up for success on, presumably you have to treat some of the vegetables a little bit different.
Yeah, you don't want to smoke them for like 12 hours or 14 hours like you would a beef brisket or pulled pork.
That sounds like it'd be very shrivelly.
Pork shoulder, right. Yeah, I mean, you can like... You can baste the vegetables. You can use these kind of similar techniques, but I really wouldn't go, super long, half hour, an hour maybe, that sort of thing. Zucchini can be pretty good smoked. It takes up a lot of flavor. You can put in like beans, you know, if you're making baked beans, you can put that in the smoker or on your Weber kettle or whatever and put some wood chips in. Baked beans are good smoked. There's a lot of different things, and that goes kind of into the different smokers, pits, grills, that sort of thing. And a lot of people, like in the Texas Hill Country, will use a Texas offset smoker, more of a kind of a horizontal presentation with a smoke box. Weber kettles, there's different techniques, like the snake technique with using the charcoal and then putting wood chips on top of it, and it goes for a while. Big green egg or Kamado style, those are very nice. They're a little expensive, but they're nice. There's a bullet smoker, pellet style, electric, which pellet kind of gets into, and then gas assist. A lot of restaurants will use gas assist with wood chips, that sort of thing, or sawdust. And you find that in a lot of meat shops that will smoke, or like your grocery store meat shop that will smoke some meat. They will use like sawdust or compacted sawdust in a big kind of walk-in smoker type presentation. And that's usually gas assist or electric. So a lot of different ways you can do it.
How do you feel about liquid smoke, Rick?
Well, different applications. I mean, I don't totally discount liquid smoke, because when you're trying to do something like a smoked drink, I've seen some people put a little liquid smoke into that.
I think I've put it in a mac and cheese a time or two.
Mac and cheese, that sort of thing. When you can't smoke something, there's actually smoked salts that are pretty good.
I forgot about smoked salts.
And I've cured bacon in smoked salts with smoke salt, brown sugar, some black pepper, and that actually turned out quite well when you don't have a smoker to use. So it doesn't totally replace it, but it does help if you need a little bit of smoke flavor. I'm not going to discount those things at all. I mean, you got the tools, use them.
Well, let's go back to the smoked cocktails here, because I don't know where I've been. I've never heard of these before until like a month ago. And now all of a sudden, everyone I know is talking about smoked cocktails. So that's either just one of those, I've never seen a license plate from Arkansas and suddenly that's all I can see moments, or these are very trendy right now. How do you smoke a cocktail? Is that mostly the adding the liquid smoke, or are there other ways to do it?
No, the big way to do it is with a smoking gun that will... You put some...
That sounds criminal.
I know.
That's, you're on the air, Rick, and people can hear you.
The smoking gun. usually it's kind of an apparatus that will suck in air, and it's battery powered, and then you put sawdust or some small chips in there, but usually it's sawdust, and it will suck in air and then make smoke, and there's a tube. And then you put the drink under a glass dome style thing. And then I know. The presentation would be you taking that glass dome off and the smoke coming out, and then all of that sort of. It's a thing. And it really started in Fargo here at the Hodo probably 6 years ago, when it was still the Hodo, and they started that, and I couldn't stop drinking them for a while.
They are pretty delightful. All right. Well, as you travel across the state, Rick, where are you most likely to stop for some good barbecue?
Yes, there's a lot of good barbecue in the state, and a lot more than this list, but I've found some that I really enjoy. And Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck is always very, very good. They do brisket the right way, too. It's still moist and it has that nice red smoke ring.
So it's not just beer there.
No, and they have music, too. And it gets to be for a good night. The food's quite good. And, their beers are very good, too. The Fire Pit in downtown Bismarck, there's a guy named Daryl that used to have a food truck and then a restaurant in Mandan, and the restaurant didn't really work out there, so he started something in downtown Bismarck, and that's a place I need to try. I've been given a recommendation because I've had his ribs quite a few times and the food truck, and those are very good. So the Fire Pit in downtown Bismarck, it's fairly new, so I need to try that. I've also been recommended Bones Barbecue in Minot, and some people have said they have the best brisket in the state of North Dakota, so that's kind of fun.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
stop I need to make.
Yeah, that sounds like a challenge accepted for you, Rick.
Yes. And then here in Fargo, I do always like going to Jay's Smoke and Barbecue on Main Avenue. That's always very solid. And they just do a good job. And they have breakfast, too, that are very good. You can get some brisket with that. And then,
yeah, I'm just thinking like smoked eggs. That sounds like that would be really good.
It does. Maybe I should suggest that to them. We're coming up with all sorts
of
stuff.
We have so many ideas, yes. Rick.
Yes.
And they're all good.
I agree.
We check in with Rick Guillon once a week, and we are always open to recommendations and, frankly, invitations. So send them to plates@prairiepublic.org. Rick, thanks for your time today.
You bet.
This coming Sunday is Mother's Day, a day when we honor the efforts and many sacrifices of mothers. But of course, if you've lost your mother, it can be extra difficult. What's left after someone passes on? Photographs, certainly. Maybe phone messages. Grief can hit you in many ways and at many different times. Today, we are sharing a memorial from independent producer DeMay Lowe Roberts, who lost her mother 2 decades ago and produced this radio piece on saving voicemails from her mom every 100 days.
My story has been intrinsically linked to my mom's story, a World War II Taiwanese woman who never had a childhood because she was sold as a baby to be a servant to other people, her adopted step-parents. The short story is she suffered childhood abuse, met my father, left Taiwan, and had 2 children, my brother and me. She worked as a mill worker, had her husband die, and then when she retired, got breast cancer. The longer story is that she, who needed a parent so badly, got me to take care of her the last 3 years of her life as she fought this disease. 3 or 4 days out of the week, I lived in Eugene at my mom's home, 2 hours away from Portland. My brother Kirby lived with her as the live-in caretaker. I was the traveling one, arranging, keeping track, through phone messages when I wasn't there.
Baby, are you home? With your mother, I want to know how you feeling. Bye.
She didn't like leaving messages. Even sweet messages sounded angry.
Baby, it's your mother. Happy birthday.
In the last 3 years, she got better at the sweetness thing.
Baby!
And then she got sick twice. She went into the hospital. The first time, I flew to Taiwan where she was visiting relatives and I brought her home. We thought she had a lung infection. And then 6 months later, we discovered the reason she was still coughing was because she had breast cancer that spread to her lungs. We tried chemo, and 1 treatment sent her to the hospital again, this time with pneumonia. My brother, who also hated the phone, had to call me to come to the hospital.
Message marked urgent.
Hello? Baby, it's Kirby. They didn't quite get all the fluid out of her lungs or something. I asked the nurse, and it's still got a 100.8-degree temperature for some reason. It's a little better than yesterday. I hope to hear from you soon. Bye.
It's hard to understand my brother, even when he's not upset. Meanwhile, my mom got worse the second time at the hospital and decided to go home to die. She went on hospice and got a nice nursing aide, Linda, who became our friend.
Hi, DeMay, this is Linda, and I'm over at your mom's, and I just want to let you know everything's fine and looking good. She's looking really healthy. Better.
Ma got better and graduated from hospice after 6 months. A miracle.
Had a good breakfast, and what more can I say? Everything's going well. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
The only thing that gave away her health was her cough.
Baby, your mother. How come you didn't call today? Are you home?
We got in a routine of me visiting her every 5 days to spend 3 days at a time with her to relieve my brother who lived with her. Then she started fading again, went on hospice, and just got worse.
Baby, this is your mother. Are you home?
It's weird how you get used to the progression of an illness. She couldn't eat, went down to 80 pounds, lost her voice. I had to bend down to her lips to understand what she was saying. You beat yourself up wondering if there was something you could have done or Why didn't you spend more time with her? At the end, we got closer than I ever thought possible. I began to call her Mommy, not Mother, not Ma. She liked that. We watched videos on her bed and tried to talk. At the end, she didn't go easy. But my brother and I were there at her bedside with her friends.
Next message. Sent Friday, May 3rd.
Hi, D-May. It's Elaine. I just looked at the email from you regarding your mom passing away. I'm glad that you and your brother were there by her bedside. And I'm sending lots of good prayers and thoughts towards you and your family. I love you.
Even after living with impending death for nearly 3 years, it's still a shock when it comes. I remember one of the nice messages when I was sick with a cold, and she called me with a mother's worry.
Debbie, it's your mother. I wonder if you feel better or you feel good. Let me know. Bye.
I'm okay some days, not okay on others. Death is still the short story. The long story is how we live with it, endure it, remember it, and then let go of the pain so we can live again. We interred Mommy's ashes at the Kuan Yin Temple. I take comfort in the Buddha saying, life is suffering, and the key to happiness is that there is nothing to attain in life. Yeah. Let go of the wants and needs and regrets and learn to be happy. But I'm going to remember. We will always remember.
Debbie, it's your mother.
End of message.
Independent producer DeMay Lowe Roberts. That piece comes to us from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 8th. May is National Historic Preservation Month. Once a week on Dakota Datebook, we're featuring historic structures and places in North Dakota related to our transportation infrastructure. Today, our topic is the Fairview Lift Bridge. Railroads helped fill out the cities and towns of North Dakota. By 1910, much of the state contained established railroad lines. However, many railways continued to try different routes. The Fairview Lift Bridge was constructed around 1913. It was supposed to be part of a Great Northern Transcontinental Line through North Dakota and Montana. And while the project did not succeed, that branch of railway was used for decades within McKenzie County. It was last used in the 1980s. The Fairview Lift Bridge is the only vertical lift bridge in the state. It was constructed on track between Fairview, Montana, to Watford City. The bridge crosses the Yellowstone River just east of the state line. 300 feet east of the bridge is the Cartwright Tunnel, which was the only completed railroad tunnel in the state. Lift spans had to be built into the structure because the Yellowstone River was considered a navigable waterway, though commercial river traffic had actually decreased by the time of construction. According to reports, the lift span had only been operated once to test it out. When a gas pipeline was laid across the bridge in 1930, special consideration of the lift had to be implemented. Because of the lift on the bridge, the pipeline had to be laid in a way that a section of it could be disconnected and raised with the bridge, with just a temporary interruption to the flow. As automobile traffic increased, planking was added to the bridge deck. Since trains still used the bridge, a watchman was employed to reduce safety risks. At first, the Great Northern Railway monitored car access and charged a toll. In 1937, the North Dakota State Highway Department took on this responsibility. Residents of Williston held a picnic to celebrate the elimination of the tolls. In the 1950s, a highway bridge was constructed north of the lift bridge, ending the car traffic. The old Fairview Lift Bridge remains largely intact today, honored with a listing in the National Register of Historic Places. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Sarah Walker. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
That's it for this Wednesday edition of Main Street. Tonight on Prairie Public, it's Travel with Rick Steves as the show looks at when it's worth it to pay to rent a car in Europe. And tomorrow on the show, the philosophy of being offended. Easy to do, hard to know what to do with. A conversation with philosopher Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. That's tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.